Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Thank you, Lynn, and welcome everyone to another edition of Talking Twilight Zone. With me today, as always, along with Lynn, who opened our program, are Kelly and Ken and Robert. And we are here to discuss in depth one of the most memorable episodes of the entire series, The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. If you are new to this program, I would like to point out that we also run a Yahoo discussion group on the web, The Twilight Zone Revisited and Reviewed. We are currently in the process of reviewing in order all of the episodes from season one. And there's also a poll there for this and other episodes. All you need to do is join our group and you can vote on it. I also want to point out that we have a book out. That's right, The Twilight Zone Revisited and Reviewed. Volume 1 is now available at Amazon.com and other internet booksellers. The cover price is $19.95 and it is well worth it. Inside you will find our reviews of all 36 episodes from season 1. As taken right off the board at our group. You can't miss this book just by looking at it. The front cover is a photo from one of the biggest classic episodes, Burgess Meredith in Time Enough at Last, and the back cover photo features Inger Stevens in The Hitchhiker. This one is not to be missed, just the first volume of what we hope will eventually be 5 books covering all the seasons of this classic TV series. So let us begin today's show by going back to Lynn for her summary and review of this episode. Okay, Lynn, the monsters have landed. Let's see what happens. It's all yours.
Okay, thank you, Bobby. Before I begin my summary of this episode, though, I would like to turn it over to Robert for his clip of Rod Serling's opening narration. So do your thing, Robert.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Maple Street, USA. Late summer. A tree-lined little world of front porch gliders, barbecues, the laughter of children, and the bell of an ice cream vendor. At the sound of the roar and the flash of light, it will be precisely 6:43 p.m. on Maple Street. Maple Street, in the last calm and reflective moment before the monsters came.
And back to you, Lynn.
Well, thank you for that clip, Robert. And now the summary. Okay, The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street is an episode that many Twilight Zone fans do consider to be one of the classics of the series. We start out seeing a quiet and friendly little neighborhood, or street in this case, Maple Street to be exact, where it's a beautiful sunny day and all the neighbors are outside going about their business. Adults and kids alike are enjoying the day, a day which is suddenly disrupted by a bright light and a deafening sound overhead in the sky. Nobody knows what it was or what happened, but everyone knew that it did happen. Suddenly, all power was cut off from every home on Maple Street. They couldn't even start their cars. Well, what else can they do other than to find out the cause? So Steve and Charlie, played wonderfully by Claude Akins and Jack Weston, decide to walk into town to find out what happened. In the meantime, another neighbor named Pete Van Horn said he would visit the next closest street to find out if they had power. So as Steve and Charlie are setting out to walk into town, a young boy named Tommy, who lives in the neighborhood and who happens to be a science fiction fan, tells them that they shouldn't go. So when Steve asks why, the boy tells them that they don't want him to go. And Steve asks who they are. And the kid shows them a sci-fi comic book and explains that there are aliens who send families to Earth who look and act exactly like Earthlings to basically spy on us. Now, at first, everyone just laughs at Tommy, until the doubts start setting in. And why is that? Because one of their neighbors, a man named Les Goodman, was unable to start his car. And then the car started on its own after he got out of it. Suddenly, Les's family was presumed to be the alien family, because one lady said she noticed him stargazing at night. Well, what a crime. The neighbors stand outside and watch his house as if holding a vigil. After a while, the people start pointing fingers. Now, maybe it was Steve's family, because he was a ham radio operator. But no one had ever seen his ham radio. Oh, there was another crime. Eventually, guess who decided to reappear? P. Van Horn. Walking toward them in the darkness, nobody could recognize him, and the panic struck Charlie, played by Jack Weston, shoots him dead before he could see who it was. Suddenly, Charlie's power is the first to be restored. Well, there you go. Charlie is presumed to be the alien who restored the power to his own family's home. He swears he's not an alien, but rocks start flying through the air, and Charlie starts to point a finger at the kid, saying that the kid knew too much, and all of a sudden, an outright riot begins, with everyone accusing everyone else due to their fears and insecurities. Everyone wants to destroy everyone else. This went on from early in the day into the night. At the end, you see two aliens overlooking this whole scenario from somewhere above Maple Street, somewhere above everywhere. The younger alien asks the elder alien, "Is this always the way it is? Is this always the way it ends?" And the elder alien says, "Yes, with few variations. People pick the most dangerous enemy they can find, and it's themselves. So they will continue to search other planets, one to the other, one to the other planets." As Rod Serling said in his closing narration, prejudices can kill and suspicions can destroy. Now, I love this episode, and I never get tired of watching it. Claude Akins and Jack Weston were superb actors and brought so much to this story, and this story holds as true today as it did so many years ago. People in our society will always be prejudiced and suspicious of those who are different in any way, but hopefully we've made some progress over the years. I think we have, and hopefully I'm not being naive. The only thing that bothered me about this episode is why it took Pete Van Horn all day and into the evening to find out about the power on the next block, when he knew the people on Maple Street were waiting for his report. That's my only grievance about this one, and I know there would be no good ending without it. But I'm just thinking in non-Twilight Zone perspective on that. It's still a classic episode to me. So over to you, Kelly, and what are your thoughts on this one?
Oh, I liked this one a lot, too. I mean, it definitely plays on the fears of people and how when something unexplained happens, people try to look for an explanation, and even if the explanation seems absurd, they still will go for it. I mean, for one thing, that kid talking about the space aliens at the beginning, you know, you would think that people would just blow it off. I mean, even with the car starting, you would still think people would just say, look, there's got to be some other explanation. I mean, who are we to believe a kid who's reading comic books? I mean, it's a freaking comic book, for heaven's sakes. But I do agree with you about that whole thing with Pete Van Horn. I thought it was a little odd that it took him that long to get back to Maple Street. And the fact is, if you recall, as he's walking calmly towards them, they're all freaking out. And you can clearly see that he probably could have seen Jack Weston with a gun. So you would think he would have been waving his arms saying, hey, guys, I know what's going on. But yet he doesn't say anything. I mean, you would think that with everybody freaking out the way they are, particularly when he's gone as long as he is, you would think he would have come running back saying, hey, you know, here's what I found out. But yet he's completely silent, and he just is calmly walking towards them, even as Jack Weston takes the gun and takes aim at him. So, but yeah, other than that, I liked it a lot.
Yeah, but don't you think that was the weirdest part of the whole episode?
It was.
I know they needed that. I know they needed that at the end to give a closure to it. But don't you think that was the weirdest part that Pete Van Horn walks out in the early morning hours in the broad daylight and doesn't come back until evening and says, I'm going over to the next street and see if they have power. And then doesn't come back till like 8 hours later?
I know. It's very, very strange. Maybe he got invited to a barbecue on the other street. I don't know. I mean, he went over, some neighbors said, well, since you're here, hey, we're barbecuing some steaks on the grill. Why don't you stay for a while?
Well, maybe I'll run next door and just let everybody know what's going on, then I'm going to come back and eat a hamburger. Okay, so Ken.
Anyway, so what do you think of it, Ken?
Yes, I agree with both of you. I gave it a classic rating. I have listed already my top 10 to 15 Twilight Zone episodes. This one's about number 5. I'll let you know what the other ones are as we get to it. You already know what my number 1 is, Mirror Image.
Oh,
and that's on our talk show. And anybody who hasn't heard it, there's an excellent opening by a certain individual who spends about 15 minutes reviewing the episode. So if you want to hear an excellent review, you got to check that out on TalkShoe. But as far as monsters do on Maple Street, I agree, Lynn. This is an episode that you can watch the second time, the third time, even after a year, you can watch it again and not get tired. And that's the key to good stories.
Oh, I could watch it 100 times, yeah.
Yeah, and the story writing, I like the way it's presented, really. It's in a neighborhood, and it's on Maple Street. Just think if you tried the scenario in an office building with a lot of people working. I don't think that would work. Or if you tried maybe a movie theater setting and tried the same story, I don't think it would work. Or in a sporting event, it wouldn't work. But this story really works for a typical neighborhood in anywhere USA, Maple Street, and you've got town folk, and you've got a little boy, and you've got a guy with his car, and you've got the lady in a... Why is a woman wearing a dress in the middle of a day? I don't get that.
Maybe she was on her way to a tea with some ladies.
But the build-up. Here's the key, too, the good story writing.
Ozzy and Harriet.
Yeah. But the build-up of the story. All right, the build-up starts off, you're at one level. Then you get to that second level. And then the story evolves into nighttime. And then it rises into another level. And then you have someone shot. And then people start pointing fingers. And the casting of the characters was really good. Claude Akins, Jack Weston, very, very good. And then, how is it going to end? You're kind of on the edge of your seat. And then a shocking ending, really. I did not see it coming. Maybe you guys who are smarter saw it coming. But all of a sudden, the scene pans over to two aliens looking at Maple Street from a distance, and you see the flickering light, and you see the nighttime, and then you see the people running all over the place in hysteria, and then they have their little conversation. This is how we disrupt planet Earth. And really, they just nailed it. The writer, I guess Rod Serling wrote this one, He just nailed it.
He did.
It's like taking a hammer and you just nail it in and it goes all the way in, and what a climax. They get onto their spaceship and take off. And you're just left wondering, wow, what if this happens to my neighborhood?
Mm-hmm.
And guys, I got to ask everybody a question right now. Are there aliens in the city of Washington, D.C., up on a mountain? And are they doing the same thing?
The whole Congress.
Yeah, are they doing the whole thing with the Congress? And they are disrupting them because nothing seems to be getting done in Washington, D.C. You got to wonder if aliens are disrupting everything.
Well, Ken, it's as good of a theory as any. Yeah.
By the way, Can I interrupt for one second? I'll get right back to you, but I would like to welcome Dave from England is here tonight.
Ooh.
Yeah,
Dave from England.
Yeah, Dave from England. He came in to see us tonight. Okay, go ahead, Ken.
The only thing I would have added to the story is one more character. You got to have Agnes Moorhead as part of the aliens watching over it. They just had two guy aliens. You got to have a third one. And if they had Agnes Moorhead as the female, that would have made it the best episode in the entire series.
You are so obsessed with Agnes Moorhead. I can't. Oh my God.
All right, Robert. I'm going to throw it over to you.
Yes, Robert. Please get him off of this Agnes Moorhead obsession.
Yeah, I mean, any episode he would love to have Agnes Moorhead, and I don't.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Don't know why, but I mean, I like my. Are due on Maple Street, but I give it a 4, but normally I would give it like a 4.5, between a 4 and 5. It just needed something to take it over for me. I mean, I love the build up. Claude Akins, wonderful actor. He was great in the role. I love how it built it up. I love how they would go to the new person in town. And then from the new person to town, it was almost like a virus. It kind of spread it from that point on. But, like I said, it just needed something to tip it over to a classic.
What do you think it needed? What do you think it needed?
Well, either the alien being among them, not the people not knowing that that person was an alien, maybe the new person being the alien himself, or just some kind of reaction from the town people, like, you know, hey, let's go outside of town and see maybe what's going to happen. And then maybe they're going up there, they see the spaceship, they see the two aliens, and then they have to take off in a hurry as the people throw rocks and stuff. You know, something to just kind of tip it over for me. But, you know, other than that,
Do you think there it needed more death or... more death. As in someone else being killed, or
well, it just needed something, and I give just a couple examples. This is kind of hard to pinpoint for me. I mean, I really liked the story, but it just needed something that was missing, and I don't know what it is. But in that, I mean, it's a wonderful story. I did enjoy it. Maybe death. Maybe like I said, having the alien being unknown to the people in that town. Who knows? But like I said, I enjoyed the story. It was pretty good. There is a connection between Doctor Who and Twilight Zone, but I'll bring that up in a general discussion. So I'll pass it over to Bobby. Bobby, have you been having any electrical problems or your car not starting lately?
No, I don't currently own a car, so I don't have to worry about that. In my review on the board, I had mentioned when this episode played, I was 13 years old. And about a year before this episode was on TV, there was, where I lived, which was in Baltimore, Maryland, we had a blizzard. We had about 2 feet of snow, which was the most I'd ever seen in my life up to that time. And we were completely snowed in. We weren't able to get out of our house for, about 4 or 5 days. And what happened was the electricity, all of a sudden in the middle of the snowstorm, there was a big crack. You could hear it outside somewhere. And I looked out my bedroom window, and I saw that the top of a telephone pole had snapped off and was hanging on the electrical power lines. So all the electricity went off. The only thing was the electricity went off on our side of the street and not on the other. So for the rest of the week, we were extremely envious of the fact that there was electricity over there. But we couldn't get out to find out why. We couldn't even open the front door. So we just sat there in the dark, running out of food and getting nowhere while they seemed to go about their daily lives. And then we found out later on after the storm and after we dug ourselves out that there's two different power lines on that street, one on one side and one on the other. But nobody ran out into the street. Nobody killed anybody. We didn't riot. We didn't go crazy. We did a lot of cursing because we wanted to know why we were chosen to have no electricity. But that's an indication of how reasonable people in the real world might not go off half-cocked about the fact that the electricity is off and the phone service is on. Also, I have to wonder, and I've been thinking to myself and wondering, whether that could happen today. We live in a more sophisticated world. We now have not just telephones and electricity. We also have cell phones, and we have the Internet. Now, of course, if aliens were to land, they'd probably have no trouble taking that out, too. So probably we'd be helpless no matter what, as many things as we have. So I wonder, though, but if people are there's a different mentality now than there was in 1959, and I wonder if that would happen. After all, I mean, I was one of millions of people watching live that day when planes crashed into the World Trade Center, but it didn't occur to me that maybe this was a general invasion, were we being invaded by somebody, and were other planes going to crash into other buildings, things like that. After when you're in this kind of time, after the year 2000, you're a little more sophisticated and you're not believing that kind of stuff. So I'm not so sure that people would go that crazy just because the electricity went out and the phones went out because, well, I'm on the Internet all the time like everybody, and it goes out all the time. So it's not really a big deal. I'm not so sure it looks a little dated only because of that. And speaking of dated, I guess it was Ken who asked a little while ago why this woman was wearing a dress in the middle of the day. In 1959, women were wearing dresses. Pants for women didn't come until a little bit later than that.
My mother always did. My mother always wore a dress during the day.
Peter's mother not only wore dresses, she also wore pearls in order to clean the house during the day.
Like Harriet from Ozzie and Harriet, yeah.
All of the mothers then wore dresses and pearls and jewelry and everything like they were in Hollywood, which just happens to be where they were. So anyway, getting back to monsters, I'm not so sure you could get that kind of reaction today. People are a little bit different. Another thing interesting about it is it shows you how complacent we are, especially in this country. I mean, we're all lucky to be living here. You turn on the lights and they come on, as long as you paid your bill, if you're not out in the street, and your car generally starts. Everything happens the way we expect. You turn on the water, and the water's there. And then so all of a sudden, when it's not there, that becomes a big deal. We're really fast to start questioning what is going on. If I went in the bathroom right now and the water wasn't on, I'd say, now what the heck is going on? Where's the water? So we become so used to having everything that it's easy to panic when it isn't there because, well, we're just complacent. Living in the United States is one of those things that you expect everything to be there. And it's always there. So I can understand why if everybody on the street would suddenly not have those conveniences, why they would go a little crazy. But the thing about this episode that resonates with me really doesn't have a lot to do with the story up until the end. I mean, the story, the acting is good, everybody's right, and everybody does a great job, but it's really a fairly mundane story early on, which is to say that it's a typical invasion story. Something is happening, everybody's scared, things like that. What really strikes me, the episode really took off for me at the end. And I'm not necessarily talking about the twist ending, because there are a lot of twist endings, and I didn't see it coming. I was only 13 years old. I wouldn't see it today. I probably wouldn't have guessed it today. But the thing that really got to me was about, I like the way Serling writes this episode. He does it with a very light touch. He doesn't really bash you over the head with it. It's not a typical invasion story. When I was a kid, the two big movies for me were out in the 50s. One was Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which was in 53, and the other was War of the Worlds, which is in 57. These were both before this.
Yeah.
So War of the Worlds, I'm talking about the 50s one, not the remake later on, but in War of the Worlds, I mean, spaceships are coming down, there's these big evil-looking things, and they're shooting laser beams, and they're destroying buildings, and they're wrecking the entire planet.
Were you scared when you heard that? I mean, were you like everybody else, and did you actually think that it was happening? Because a lot of people actually believed it. Were you scared too?
Well, it depends on how deeply you get into it. Yeah, if you get deeply enough into it, you can begin to wonder. Yeah, sure. But War of the Worlds is a typical, we're going to take over the Earth, and if we have to destroy everybody, so be it, we'll do that. Invasion of the Body Snatchers is a little bit different, both the original and the remake back in the 70s, in that you have aliens coming here and just creating copies of people, and then they're just going to take over that way. They're going to do it slowly. They're going to go from town to town to town. I have a feeling that Serling probably sort of based the story on Body Snatchers because it's almost a story like that. So at the end of it, when you see the alien standing there, and this to me is the best part of the episode. Sure, the initial shock is you go, oh, I can't believe it. That's what the answer is. That's a shock right there. But the main thing is they're so quiet about it. I got two guys standing there, and please take note they don't look like space aliens. They look like everybody else. They look perfectly normal. They don't look unusual in any way. So and they're talking to each other very quietly, and they say, this is all you have to do, just turn people against each other, and we'll just go from neighborhood to neighborhood, and then the stairs go up under them, as when you hear the guy saying, one to the other, one to the other. To me, that's where the episode really becomes important, because Serling could have written a typical aliens take over the Earth, and there's been countless ones in movies and books, and until this day, you still have movies like that. Which is fine, but I've never been one to be into special effects. It doesn't mean that much to me to see spaceships and all. I would rather see a quiet kind of story, and that's what this is. It's more terrifying this way to think about the fact that they could take us over and we don't even realize it while it's happening. It's, to me, much scarier. I mean, if spaceships show up all of a sudden, that's a big deal, but we do have weapons here. We can fight back. But you can't really fight back if they're sneaking in the neighborhood and turning people into each other. I have one more thing to say about this episode, and then I'll shut up. I know I'm going on too long, but the other thing is a lot of Twilight Zone episodes that started in the late 50s and ran into the 60s actually predict the future. They really do. And this is one of the classic ones. Here it is, 1959, and people are fighting each other in the streets. I can't remember that happening in the 50s when I was growing up at all. I can't think of any other incident. And yet, just a few years after this episode, after Martin Luther King was assassinated, you had the racial riots in the streets. You had riots in the streets over the Vietnam War. You had people fighting each other. And this episode predates that. And it's almost like saying, if you don't keep your head about you and you don't watch what you're doing, and if you get prejudices getting in the way, you might find yourself fighting in the streets. And indeed, that's exactly how it turned out. And like in the story, we really didn't take aliens. We were actually turning against each other. So there, that's my piece. That's all I got to say.
All right,
well, Bobby?
Let me see if go ahead, Robert.
I was going to say, you know, I kind of bring up the point into where you mentioned about the invasion of body snatchers. Now, if I remember, the Kevin McCartney movie was back in 56, 57, wasn't it?
No, that was 53.
Yeah,
I remember the world's in 57. I looked it up at IMDb today.
Yeah, back
okay.
time. Yeah.
Maybe that's what they needed. Maybe one of the people in there needed to be the alien that was in disguise, maybe using enough, you know, that's what I'm kind of mean. Just something. I understand it was the 1969, but for me, it just needed something else.
What you're saying is that instead of just seeing the aliens at the end of the story, they should already have taken over one person on the street.
Yeah, and they should have communicated back with the ship saying, you know, our experiment worked or whatever.
How about since the kid brought it up in the first place? How about he would have been one of them? Because he would have reasons, if he was one of the aliens, he would have reason to start, he's the one who started the rioting. He started it. Until then, nobody suspected anything.
Well, I thought that whole thing was stupid. I mean, why would they listen to, like, what was he, about 10 or 11 years old? And they're listening to some kid and showing them a comic book? I mean, that was kind of dumb right there. Here's a comic book, and they show aliens, and Claude Akins, what's his name? Jack Weston. Look at that and say, well, maybe that's true. Oh, come on.
Robert brings up a valid point, because that's how it is in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where they're taking over bodies one by one, and you really don't know whether your wife or your neighbor or your best friend has already been. Once they discover what's going on, the question is it already too late? And so I think what Robert is saying is, had the kid really been one of them, he would have had, because when I'm watching this story, I'm wondering why this kid comes out of nowhere and all of a sudden is starting trouble. Why should he shut up? Why? Because he's the one who starts it. Let's go to another neighborhood and see why the lights are out. Mm-hmm. He gets in there and goes, oh, no, don't leave. They don't want us to leave. Just stay here. It sounds like he has an agenda, and his private agenda may be that they've already taken over his body. I think you're right, Robert. I think it's interesting to note that.
It's like putting a pebble in a river or a pond and having the ripple spread.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Well, listen, I would like to hear what Dave from England has to say. So, Dave from England, what do you have to say about this show? Dave, you're still here.
You might have muted. You might have muted.
What do you have to say? Well, I want to hear your views.
We can't hear you, Dave. Sorry.
I hear him.
Oh, my.
You
hear
him.
I hear him. I hear him.
Well, really?
Yeah. Well, try again, David. Oh, you are having a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, well, fill in what he says.
Wait. Just give him a chance to get it fixed up. I want to hear what Dave has to say. It's a man from England. I want to hear what he has to say. You know, because The Twilight Zone was shown in America and England, and I want to know what Dave has to say. So, are you there, Dave?
Apparently not.
He says in the chat he's talking, but...
Oh, wait. Are you talking in chat? Okay, hang on. He says he's talking. All right, okay, he says he's talking. All right, hold on. On audio. Okay, all right.
He's going to try to recall in, yeah. Yeah, he hung up. He's going to try to call back in.
All right, okay, cool.
Can we get the Kelly's and the Ken's view about what Robert brought up, whether or not they thought that it would have been better if somebody out in the street had actually been part of the conspiracy? Kelly, what do you think?
Yeah.
Well, I think it would have been maybe more interesting, and certainly that's something that could have been, that might have been a good way to bring Pete Van Horn more into it full circle, because that could have been an implication for why he wasn't saying anything. He left to go meet with the aliens, to go talk to them, and when he came back, maybe the idea was that he was supposed to be sneaking up on them. But since we never really got an explanation for why Pete Horn was gone for all that time, and he made no effort to try to say, hey, it's me, don't shoot, it's one of those little mysteries.
Ken, what do you think?
Well, as I watched the episode recently, I think the key to the story also was the acting by all the actors and the characters. Now, Jack Weston, that one scene, he's at his house, right? And you just look at his face, and it's just panic, and it's just hysteria. And that was the mood that I got. And, Bob, you mentioned about on your street, you know, if the power goes off, you know, what happened. On my street, our neighbors... We're kind of quiet. We wave to each other, but we really don't get together for lunch, or we really don't have barbecues, and we really don't mingle on the street. We're all kind of just to ourselves. But one night, actually, it was a summer night, so it wasn't dark yet. It was about, I'd say, 8:30, almost close to dark, and we lost the electricity, and we lost power. So we had, listen to this, no TV and no light.
And you all have barbecues, right?
Yeah, and
yeah.
So
yeah.
I went out front, and I said, what's going on? I noticed the street lights were off. And then I noticed neighbors started coming out. And, you know, it was very strange because it took an incident like this to actually start talking to my neighbors down the street. And people came out and said, hey, do you have electricity? No. Is your computer working? No. No TV. Can't watch the game tonight. And no cell phone. Also, the towers were out. So we started talking, and we were twiddling our fingers, and we were looking at each other, and we're going, you know, what can we do tonight? And then it started to get dark, and we got our flashlights, and some people had candles. And it was a summer night, but we were outside, and we go, what do we do tonight? You know, all our entertainment's gone. And so we started talking to the neighbors for an hour and a half, how's things going? It was almost like somebody wanted all the electricity to go off so that people would start talking to their neighbors again. Very strange.
Well, Ken, can I ask you a question? Do you remember I don't even remember how many years, maybe about 7 years ago when all the electricity went out in New York City?
I remember. Yeah,
okay.
I think I remember.
All right. I was supposed to see, Bob, one of my favorite performers of all time, Bob Dylan, was performing 3 concerts on a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Okay, I love Bob Dylan. So he was performing three concerts. Okay, a Friday, I had tickets to all three concerts. I went to the Friday. I went to the Saturday. The Sunday night show was the one where all the power went off. So I come home early from work, and my husband says to me, you're not going to New York tonight. I said, what do you mean I'm not going to New York tonight? He said, there's no power in New York. I said, what do you mean there's no power in New York? He said, there's no power. There's no lights. There's no nothing. There's nothing. It's all gone. And I said, well, shit. And so, excuse my language. But I said, well, hell. And I said, well, okay, all right. So what? He said, well, you can't go. And I said, okay, I guess I can't. Because if there's no power, I can't get there. Everything was shut off completely.
Yeah.
And I did not get to see Bob. I saw him Friday and Saturday, but I did not get to see him Sunday. And I bought tickets for all their concerts because I was a big fan. So, you know, it was just an amazing thing to see all the power shut off in whole city.
Lynn, what would happen, let's say in our town, in our city, do you think the people's reaction would be if, let's say, no electricity, no water, no TV, no cell phones, no computers, and let's say for a week and then 2 weeks went by, do you think the people in the city would start to turn on the leaders of the city and say, hey, if you don't get my computer back, if you don't get my TV, I got to see the Laker game. If you don't do that, you think the town would be in an uproar?
Yes, absolutely.
We had that happen last year in Columbus, Ohio, when we had a windstorm come through and knocked the power out. Ours was out for like 3 days, but others were out for a week, and others longer than that. So,
did the people turn? Did they get angry?
They ran out of ice because people were buying ice, and traffic lights were off, so your stop signs become a four-way stop. But I think everybody handled it pretty well.
It goes back to what I said earlier. I mean, I don't think there's that much difference between 59 and now, because we're just as arrogant now as we were then. That is that we expect all this creature to be here. We expect all this creature comforts to be here. We take them for granted every day. In other countries, they're not so lucky. I mean, look what happened recently with the two earthquakes that happened. I mean, 1 minute they had everything, and 5 minutes later they had nothing. So that's how quickly things can turn on you, but you can't live your life if you worry about it all day. So we don't worry about it, we don't think about it. So when it does happen, and inevitably, that's when people go crazy. I don't know whether people would really ride in the streets now. That's debatable. It depends on how long and what the circumstances are, because we live in a much smaller world now where you can get information from a lot of sources. Now, if you're talking about space aliens, they can turn off everything. They can turn off anything they want to turn off. So it doesn't matter how many things we have. They're just going to swoop down and take over everything. But I like this episode because I didn't want to see them swoop down and start shooting everybody or blowing up houses. That's interesting and great special effects, but that's why I'm not enamored of special effects movies. I'd rather have a story. I'd rather be fooled. I'd rather sit there at the end and go, oh, my goodness, that's what was behind it. That's what makes Twilight so different. I mean, they didn't have the kind of budget to do big-time special effects. Serling wrote the story with a very light hand. He knew that, and he wrote it that way. Having two aliens walk back into their spaceship telling you that this is just the beginning, not the end, is far more effective than having them fly down into the neighborhood and take out everybody. It meant a lot more to me.
All right. Bob.
Yeah.
I think Dave is back. From England. Dave, are you back? Dave, are you back at all?
Well, that's what happens when you try to call from England, I guess.
Oh, no, wait, just hold on. Dave, are you back? Are you back at all? That's a shame.
You said you can hear him. Can you tell us what he said?
No, I can't hear him. I heard him very briefly. Very briefly. Let me see. Dave, are you there at all?
Doesn't sound like it.
Don't feel bad. We had this a couple weeks ago, Dave.
He has a delay. A delay.
It would be easier to contact the space aliens who are invading the town.
Yeah.
He's trying to get in. He's going to try one more time.
Ken, what were you saying? I thought you bring something up.
I wanted to ask Bob, you know, Rod Serling always has a secret hidden message or agenda. It seems like every single episode.
Right.
What do you think the main point of Rod Serling was to convey?
I think it's the point that he makes in many episodes in Twilight Zone, which is that we're our own worst enemy. We create our own problems by turning on each other. We're prejudiced against the people who look different or act different or live differently. And that's, he says it in his closing narration. And if that's what we're going to do, and if that's how we're going to live our lives, by looking in everybody else's bedroom and questioning what they're doing and saying, why are they different than me?
Yeah.
Then eventually, this is what it's going to turn into. That's the message to me, at least.
I think Rod Serling's whole point was to scare the crap out of us. And because that's what I like.
The more I get into this series, and the more you really start to get into the depth of what Rod Serling as a person, you know, and his ability to write stories, it's almost like Rod Serling is really concerned for the human race, and he doesn't want the human race to really turn on each other. So all the stories he's writing is to almost like, how can I write a story and then get people to wake up to care for their fellow citizens? You know what I mean?
And Ken, it's like I said earlier, he was right. Because this is 1959, and right after that, we started one of the most contentious decades in history.
So
he was right, because I believe he died in the 70s, so he saw the 60s, and he must have said to himself, well, you know, a lot of those stories I wrote are true. People are turning on each other in the street, and why? Race riots alone will show you what can happen when people act that way. So I think the message, mind your own business, is the message.
Dave's back in. Let me see if we can get him back in. I'm sorry, but we know we have guests, and we need to take care of him.
He hung up again, Lynn. He's going to try one more time. Well, while we're waiting. Okay, he's logging the chat.
But I'm just saying, if we have guests, we have to acknowledge them, and you know, all right, Dave. All right, let me try one more time. Stop that now! Stop letting me. I'm trying to be nice to Dave. Oh, he left. No, wait, he didn't leave.
I don't blame him. I'm gonna leave myself in a minute.
Well, we're waiting for Dave to try to get his connection. There's a point I wanted to bring up about how this episode of Twilight Zone is mentioned in from a lot of different people, especially with the new Doctor Who that's out. There was an episode with David Tennant as a doctor called Midnight. In the discussion, there's a podcast called Doctor Who Pod Shock, which is TalkShoe ID 23358. And one of the hosts, Louis Trapani, there's also Ken Deep and James Naughton, talked about the very episode we're talking about tonight. So if you don't mind, I'll go ahead and play. It's a minute 30 clip.
Very much in the spirit of a Twilight Zone episode, which are 25 minutes, whatever, you know, minus the commercials, whatever. And it would have worked better in that time frame, I thought, telling this story, you know, or one of the, you know, obviously the classic series where you had half-hour episodes. It just felt like it was, it just went on a little, it just felt a little, prolonged, for the lack of a better word. But speaking of Twilight Zone episodes, it really put me in the mind of a great classic Twilight Zone episode written by Rod Serling himself. The monsters are due on Maple Street. And if you haven't seen it, I really make it your point to see. It's a great episode. And this touched upon it a little bit by where you have a cast of characters, ordinary people, as far as we can tell, and putting it, back then, 1960, with the Twilight Zone episode, it was more allegorous to the Cold War and coming off the 50s with the McCarthyism and people pointing fingers at each other and not trusting anyone and turning on your friends. And so a little bit of that was going on here, I felt.
And that was a little bit of a review that he was doing on Midnight. He was saying Midnight was quite long and it should have been a little bit shorter, but it was basically the Doctor took like a sightseeing tour with some other people, and it's set just on the spaceship itself with just him alone. And the people notice that someone is possessed by an alien, and they all kind of go against the Doctor in this one, where the Doctor himself becomes possessed by the alien. And that was one of the comparisons that was also made on the posts in 2008 when that episode came out. So I just wanted to bring that up, that, you know, people do name this as one of their favorites.
I agree with what he said, and most likely Serling was commenting on McCarthyism, but that was more by innuendo, and he didn't even realize that McCarthyism was going to get a lot worse in the 60s when people actually were rioting in the streets. So it went from bad to worse. So he probably had a feeling that after he wrote this story and as time went on, he probably thought to himself, well, I was right all along. Since we're still doing the same things we were doing then, now people really are rioting in the streets. It's the kind of thing, if you don't listen to somebody, it could get worse later on.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was so concerned with getting David in here that I didn't pay attention to anything else. He said that was caused by one relay that triggered a cascade of fail-safers. Can you hear me? No, I can't hear him. Oh, my God, this is terrible. Now he's gone completely.
All right, well, okay. I think we've played around with him long enough today.
Yeah, well,
those things happen on our last show. None of us got through, so it could have been worse than that. I think we've pretty much played this to death today. The consensus, obviously, is that that everybody's happy with it, but when I first saw Robert's a poll rating is 4. I thought to myself, well, what could possibly be missing? But I rated it a 5, and I wouldn't change any of that. But I think Robert makes a valid point here that it might have been just a little even more compelling down the street had there been somebody down there who really was in on it. So I have no problems with what goes on the street, but that's an interesting thing to imagine, because the kid simply showing up, somebody mentioned earlier that why are adults taking this kid seriously and just simply saying...
He's
a kid, what does he know? We're not going to listen to him, but, you know, because I wondered even when I watched it, why would this kid all of a sudden in the middle of nowhere say, oh, no, I know what it is, we're being invaded. I mean, that's a big jump even for a kid.
Let me tell you something. We agree on every damn episode then we might not have a discussion group.
Well,
What's the point of a discussion group if you're always going to agree 100% on every episode?
You're always going to have a different opinion.
We need to have discussions, right?
Yeah.
And that's the point, right, Robert?
Yeah, right. I agree.
You can't have a discussion group if you're going to say, oh, we all think this is the classic episode. We all think it sucks. You know, we have to have some, discretion here. You know,
Let me just get in here and wrap this up and tell people what's coming up in 2 weeks. We're going to do two episodes on our next show. A World of Difference is one of them, and the other is... I believe Long Live Walter Jameson. Is that the one? I think so.
Are you there for that?
No. You're kidding.
Oh, my God.
We're going to do two because Well, not everybody agrees that they're bad, so it should be for a lively conversation.
Well,
anyway.
Most people agree that they're bad. They do suck, but I'll be there.
You mean that guy who lived to be 2,000 years old, that episode?
Yeah, the guy.
Yeah.
The Dorian Gray, I call it, episode.
And the guy who went from his real life into the movie life.
We'll do both of those 2 weeks from tonight, and hopefully when we do that, I'd like to tell everybody, to have everybody wish Kelly a happy vacation. In a few days, she's off to Hawaii for 10 days.
Ooh, happy vacation, Kelly. Aloha.
Oh, thanks.
But
I do plan.
You're in trouble tonight.
She's
going to
the show anyway.
I plan to call in from Honolulu.
Yeah, but I thought you wasn't allowed
to do the show
when you were on vacation.
What's that?
I thought he wasn't allowed to announce when you were on vacation.
Well, he just did, so...
Nobody knows where Kelly lives.
Check your home email before you go, please.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with those two episodes. Kelly will be in another location. She'll be a part of the show anyway. All right, Lynn, let's wrap it up. Let's wrap up the show.
All right. Well, thank you for everyone who was here tonight, and I will be back. We all will be back in 2 weeks for another episode of Talking Twilight Zone.